From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 12th, 2017. And on this day, state lawmakers are taking a step back on a controversial victims' rights bill. And we'll have part two of Jennifer Mitchell's story on the Pointe-le-Preux nuclear plant over the border in New Brunswick. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First tonight, state lawmakers are decelerating on a bill designed to give victims of violent crimes the same legal standing as the people accused of committing them. The bill is based on model legislation. It's backed by high-powered lobbyists and financed by a California billionaire. It also had the backing of the entire legislative leadership. But as Steve Missler reports, some lawmakers are concerned about implications to the justice system and its financial costs.
Last month, the so-called Victims' Bill of Rights proposal appeared to be on the fast track to passage. Many of the rights are already codified in Maine law, but the proposed constitutional amendment broadens those rights, including allowing victims to refuse to be the subject of a deposition or discovery by the accused or his or her attorney. Despite the early blessing from legislative leadership, some lawmakers are pumping the brakes.
At this point, there's no way I could even think about voting for this.
Republican State Senator Scott Searway is a member of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, the panel vetting the proposal. A former police officer, Searway said he's sympathetic to victims, but he's also worried about the implications of enshrining victims' rights in the Constitution. Others worry that it will upend the primary tenet of the justice system, innocent until proven guilty, the constitutional protection guaranteed to defendants. Democratic Representative Barbara Cardone is an attorney from Bangor.
To create constitutional rights for victims before the state has proven its case is to negate the presumption of innocence.
Other opponents include the Maine Chiefs of Police Association, the Maine Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Abuse, the Criminal Law Advisory Commission, and the Maine Prosecutors Association. It's supported by the National Organization of Parents for Murdered Children, as well as several people who have lost family members to violent crime. The LePage administration also endorsed the proposal, but Department of Public Safety Commissioner John Morris couched his support.
I caution you not to rush this bill.
Morris warned of unintended consequences, but didn't elaborate. But opponents were quick to point out its flaws.
The worst thing that we can do in this state to our victims is to create a set of expectations that we're not going to honor by robust funding.
Speaking on behalf of the Maine Prosecutors Association, Cumberland County District Attorney Stephanie Anderson told lawmakers that the proposal creates a set of procedures that will require additional resources, including staff and prosecutors' offices and the judicial branch. Marianne Lynch, a spokeswoman for the Maine courts, said they're not taking a position on the bill, but to expect additional costs if it's approved. Anderson described the proposal as a feel-good bill. Representative Thomas Longstaff, a Democrat from Waterville, asked Anderson what kind of message the prosecutors were sending.
The message is this. If you want these things for real, you have to pay for them. And you're not coming close right now.
Earlier this year, Montana suspended implementation of a voter-approved Bill of Rights, also known as Marcy's Law, amid concerns from law enforcement and victims' organizations about inadequate funding.
It was sold to the people because obviously everyone wants to help victims. And it was sold to the people as a basic, you know, this is not going to affect the way that we do business. And it absolutely has.
Brian Gutkin is the sheriff for Gallatin County in Montana. Gutkin told Maine Public Radio in April that the new law loosely defined victims in such a way that it also granted rights to victims of nonviolent crimes. And that's created problems for cash-strapped victim services organizations. Cumberland County District Attorney Stephanie Anderson told lawmakers to expect similar problems in Maine.
This is in front of you right now because Marcy's brother, who is worth $1.7 billion, has decided that he wants to bring this to other states in memory of his sister.
Like other proposals, the Victims' Bill of Rights in Maine is pushed by Marcy's Law for All, an organization founded and financially backed by Henry Nicholas. Nicholas's sister, Marcy, was killed by her ex-boyfriend in 1983. Since then, he's spent more than $16 million on the effort. Two-thirds of the legislature is needed to send the bill to Maine voters. But so far, the bill appears short of that threshold. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Members of the Katahdin area business community want Maine and the nation to know that support for the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is growing, even among those who initially opposed the 88,000-acre monument. The land was a gift from Maine environmentalist Roxanne Quimby. During a Bangor press conference, businessman John Ellis said he initially opposed it after his family's camp was lost as the result of Quimby's land acquisition, but he said his late father's advice changed his mind.
I remember distinctly he said, "Boys, it's time to move on. It's time to move forward and embrace this opportunity for our community and to go forward. We need to move beyond the past."
Monument supporters held press conference today, the day after the beginning of a 60-day comment period on an executive order from President Donald Trump. He has asked for a review of the designation of land set aside as national monuments since 1996. The order was welcomed by Governor Paul LePage, who opposes the Katahdin Monument designation. Point LePreux is a nuclear power plant just across the border in St. John. Next month, its operating license expires, and the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission is considering whether to renew it for another 5 years. And while that's not a lot of time for a 30-year-old plant, there are passionate arguments for and against its operation and implications for an entire region. Jennifer Mitchell continues now with the second part of her report.
Back in the 1950s, this U.S. Atomic Energy Commission film, The Magic of the Atom, was meant to ease the anxiety people might feel about living and working near a nuclear power plant.
Today, if you were to take a trip in almost any direction across our great country, you might suddenly come upon a sign such as this: Atomic City.
But after the 1979 disaster at Three Mile Island, nuclear plants developed a more sinister reputation. And ever since, facilities like Point LePreux have been battling that legacy.
Well, many of the people that live around here also work here, so it's helpful that they're inside and have an understanding of the place.
That's Paul Doucette, the communications manager for Point LePreux. His role is vital in shaping the way the plant is perceived. LePreux, he says, does everything it can to be a good neighbor, share reports and information, and learn from past mistakes.
Really, it's about educating and monitoring and being transparent.
Plus, the plant employs about 900 people and represents a third of NB Power's total energy mix. LePreux's ability to kick out energy at around 8 cents per kilowatt hour also helps keep New Brunswick power bills low. But still, there are some who are speaking out against the facility's license renewal.
Because the health risks are too great, there is no way to make nuclear safe.
Willie Nolan from Kent County, New Brunswick, says she's made it her business to follow up on past major nuclear accidents. And she says the potential devastation to the environment is a deal breaker.
I just spent some time with four survivors of Fukushima. And I'm told, you know, after the worst case scenario happened there, that there are now people dropping on the streets, 30 years old, 40 years old. We are still not finished with Chernobyl. There are still human health effects. Cancers, childhood conditions.
When it comes to a nuclear plant meltdown, there are two basic zones of concern: the critical emergency zone that extends for a 10-mile radius, and then what's known as the ingestion pathway. That spans a 50-mile radius, and in the case of LePreux, would include towns like Eastport, Calais, Lubeck, and East Machias. But how much do emergency responders in those towns know about nuclear events?
Very little.
Mike Heinerman runs Washington County's Emergency Management Agency. Rural Maine's emergency teams are well-versed in snowstorms, spring floods, and the occasional wildfire, but nuclear events are more of a mystery.
Nuclear is something that I'm not trained in. We take our cue from Augusta, from the scientist, from the communication system of New Brunswick, and basically, we do what we're told.
Everything he says would depend on an accurate flow of information from LePro to the Canadian Emergency Measures Agency, to Maine's Emergency Management Agency in Augusta, and then to him, where he could start the prescribed response. According to MEMA, the 25 to 50 mile zone would likely not include an actual evacuation based on the guidelines set by nuclear safety regulators. However, following the Fukushima disaster in 2011, Americans living within a 50 mile radius were advised by U.S. officials to get out. Mark Hyland of MEMA says historically, nuclear events have been slow motion emergencies when they happen.
So we have lots of time, even though we've got plans, we've got some pretty sophisticated plans, traffic control plans, evacuation plans, things like that. We have a lot of time to put those things into motion.
And both Hyland and Heinerman agree that evacuating a rural place like Washington County would be easier in some ways because of its small population. There would be less road congestion. It could also be challenging because of the county's reliance on volunteer fire departments. But the biggest problem, experts say, would come in the weeks and months and years after the event, because anything grown in or harvested from that 50-mile ingestion pathway could be tainted for decades.
What do you do with apples? What do you do with fish? What do you do with clams?
That's Robert Gardner, MEMA's technological hazards manager. He and his colleagues at MEMA have created a special survival guide for farmers and food processors should anything happen at LePro.
Obviously, for Washington County, that's a very big concern.
Gardner says a major LePro event would devastate the county's economy, affecting everything from shipping at Eastport to aquaculture, forest products, fishing, tipping, hunting, tourism, and of course the region's wild blueberries. But that's a worst-case scenario, something LePro plant executives say is unlikely, and which they work hard every day to avoid. LePro Vice President Nuclear Brett Plummer says he thinks every major nuclear accident could have been avoided with a better safety culture in place, and to ignore other benefits of nuclear power, he says, is short-sighted.
Our license should be renewed because this is a very important facility for New Brunswick. We are non-emitting from a greenhouse gas perspective.
As more nuclear plants like Vermont Yankee and Pilgrim cease operations, Plummer says wind and solar will try to get a piece of the action, but not enough to keep a lid on carbon emissions. He'd like to see another nuclear plant come to Maine to fill the hole left by the former Maine Yankee, but he doubts it will happen.
Because I don't think the political fortitude is there. In the U.S. At some point, they're going to be looking to Canada to supply the extra power because we were somewhat short-sighted in the U.S. in shutting down those nuclear power plants. And I think they'll have to feel some pain before they actually make any kind of commitment.
Plummer is actually a Maine native who worked at Maine Yankee before it was decommissioned in 1997. He says Canada would be positioning itself for a clean energy future by relicensing LePro. And while critics insist that the disaster risk doesn't justify those benefits, it's the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission that will have the final decision. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, May 12th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a great weekend.